Court is ready to hear from Petitioner in Travis County v. Pelzer.
May it please report, Mr. Todd Clark and Ms. Shireen Thomas will present argument for the petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 8 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Clark will open with the first 12 minutes, and Ms. Thomas will present the rebuttal.
May it please the Court. The court below incorrectly held that Section 89.004 of the Texas Local Government Code, absent any other waiver of immunity, confers a right to sue Texas counties. This court resolved the question in Essenberg v. Dallas County when it held the presentment statute is concerned with promoting settlement and is not a jurisdictional statute. Since the Essenberg opinion, courts of appeals in Houston, Eastland, Corpus Christi, and Amarillo have held likewise.
But I understand Essenberg had two aspects to it. One, saying that it was a notice statute, but to the extent that it said it was a jurisdictional statute, it wasn't addressing the question of subject matter jurisdiction in the context of a waiver of sovereign immunity. And subject matter jurisdiction can arise in numerous contexts. And there the question had to do with whether or not the exhaustion of administrative remedies was required for a court to vest jurisdiction. So Essenberg doesn't answer the question presented here, and that's not your position, is it? In terms of there whether there's a waiver.
Justice Hankinson, there is no question that the Essenberg opinion did not address sovereign immunity particularly. However, we think the holding below implicates the necessity that immunity from suit necessarily is a jurisdictional question. Subject matter jurisdiction.
No, I understand. It's just a different subject matter jurisdiction question than the subject matter jurisdiction question addressed in Essenberg.
Yes.
And you agree with that?
Yes, I
okay.
But I would point out that if you conduct a survey of 150 years of jurisprudence dealing with this statute and its predecessors, what you will find uniformly is that in each case involving counties, there has been some other basis for the court to have jurisdiction, either in those cases the matter isn't discussed, or the courts may say this may present a bar to the plaintiff's claim, or it may not, but invariably, there is some other basis apparent on the face of each of those cases. The other basis generally concerned issues of land, condemnation, trespass to try title, nuisance cases, statutorily required pay or constitutionally required payments, warrants, where once a warrant is issued by a county, it both represents the liability of the county and consent to the claim. And finally, counterclaims, where it's generally regarded that if the governmental entity pursues its own rights in court, then it will be subject to counterclaims. Additionally, the clear and unambiguous waiver requirement is not met. And I might point out that this most recent legislature amended the Code Construction Act to codify that requirement. The language of the statute provides no discussion of immunity and certainly cannot qualify for this court's precedent with regard to what language is sufficient to constitute a waiver.
To what extent is there precedent that is inconsistent with the position that you were taking today?
Your Honor, I don't believe there is any, except perhaps Jensen out of Dallas County. And I think the foundation of that case is very shaky indeed.
So we would have to overrule part of Jensen if we rule in your favor in this case?
Well, Your Honor, I think that Jensen has been largely overruled, and I think that may be why it wasn't granted in that case, because of course it did abrogate Bowles v. Wade, upon which it relied heavily. So I think
And the reason why I'm asking you this question is that the Court of Appeals opinion says that it is relying on well-established precedent and talks about the line of cases dating back to the 19th century, saying that in fact there is a waiver here. So, and I understand you've just said that you think it's to the contrary. Is there anything in that line of cases that the Court of Appeals relied upon that you believe supports the Court of Appeals' position that we would have to deal with in order to rule your way?
Your Honor, I believe that the Court below also walked through that process of trying to find cases and borrowing language out of some of them which might indicate that such a waiver occurred. But I don't believe any case other than Jensen squarely held it represented such a waiver.
What about MOPAC, 1970 decision out of this court?
No, Your Honor, I think that although unfortunate the dicta in that case is to our position, I think it is understandable because, as I said, the courts kind of struggled with whether this conferred a right to sue or allowed a plaintiff to move forward with a suit or not. But actually, the only case that the Brownsville Navigation District addressed was Hamilton County versus Garrett. And the underpinning of that case and the case that it cited is a condemnation setting, where obviously there was a right to go forward. And in fact, the Hamilton County versus Garrett case also said that they would not answer the question exactly what that statute did, the precedent set in this other case, which again was a case involving land against the county. So we think that there isn't anything in the history that would compel this court to take a different view than the one we've taken in the brief. Obviously, we think the history does indicate that the intent of the statute and the way the courts addressed it is one to promote settlement and not confer jurisdiction. In 1896, in the case of Presidio County versus Jeff Davis County, the court held that a condition proceeding is intended to save taxpayers' money and allow commissioners to pass on a claim and allow everything the plaintiff could obtain by suit. Well, our argument is supported by that, in that we're saying a plaintiff may obtain what they could otherwise obtain by suit if allowance is made for a waiver of sovereign immunity. In other words, this statute is clearly a condition proceeding going forward, but it's not a waiver of immunity.
Assume that's right. What about whether you're liable under some other theory? Absence of the application of 2260, waiver by conduct, or some other theory?
Well, Your Honor, 2260, we think, does show the legislature's intent to address the issue of waiver by conduct. And in fact, they specifically address that counties and other governmental entities would not be covered by this provision. So we think, number one, that clearly contemplating that counties are not generally subject to suit, as the respondent's position would be, that 8904 makes us generally subject to suit.
So to take the hardest case, if a county had just had the contract completed and wouldn't pay the bill because it just said we're the county, we don't have to.
Right.
You say there's no waiver of sovereign immunity for that.
I believe that's correct, Your Honor. And in fact, we recognize the concerns of fairness that are here, and that Justice Enoch points out in his two dissents, the Federal Sign and Little Text. And we think only in a situation where the conduct is so egregious, although I think the court did carefully address this in Little Text and say we're not going to consider these takings claims because we've got an agreement on both sides to enter a contract. But I think only in a case where the government's conduct is so egregious that it could be considered nothing else but a government takings without due course of law would it be appropriate to say the government has waived its immunity.
Is that a fact issue, whether it's so egregious or not?
I think that it would be, and I think that's what's most troubling about considering the possible application of a waiver by conduct exception to the counties. We clearly said we're not going to do that with the state. Here we have smaller units of government with less ability to allocate resources or raise resources and revenue. Now suddenly they'll be subject to no limitations whatsoever.
How do you defend the argument, just the general argument that you can, that the county can simply walk away from a contract it negotiated into freely and in the end just decide under Justice Heck's example that we simply don't have to pay? What's the justification for that?
Well, number one, we've not seen many cases where those are the set of facts. But granted, the parties could indicate the method of payment in their contract by which they want to proceed. So a party could immediately be on notice, let's say if the government was evidencing an intent to rescind its portion of the bargain. They aren't going to pay. The parties can contract into an arrangement where the potential or the contractor can be forewarned of the government just bought the entire agreement. But we think ultimately this isn't a case of the king being unable to do any wrong, but rather it's a question of allocation of resources and tax expense. And if the governmental entity determines that its contract no longer serves the ends of the public, at that point in time, then it would be appropriate to force them to continue down the road and extend taxpayer money.
Well, there's no question about that, but they should give back what they took in the meantime. That's the problem. We would easily agree, at least it wouldn't be as hard to agree, that if they want out at some point, they ought not have to bind the taxpayer forever, but then at least give back the performance that you've taken.
And that's what's interesting about the application of 2260 to the state. It says that the state may, through this process, end up being liable for the amount under the contract. But in a case such as ours, we have an amount under the contract remaining disputed of a little over $5,000, whereas the absence of the claim that's been brought now is for $135,000. So, again, the application of a waiver by conduct exception to counties would cause us to be liable infinitely, potentially, to a litigant, where the state has stepped in and said, with the legislature, although not addressing other governmental entities as yet, have said our procedure will only allow you to recover the full balance of the contract should the state back out.
Do you know why they did that?
I'm sorry?
Do you know why the legislature did not address county?
No, Your Honor, I don't, but this court did point out very clearly, I think, in LaPorte versus Barfield, that the legislature does act in that way commonly. They move forward, in that particular case, with the workers' compensation laws and their application, in a piecemeal way. It may not produce an immediate satisfactory result for the people concerned, but it does show that there's a process involved where they go through one step at a time. And I don't have legislative history that that's what occurred here, but the statute does clearly say we're not going to touch immunity, and we're not going to touch these other...
Who contracted on behalf of the county? Who signed this contract to Pelzel?
It would have been the County Commissioner's Court, Your Honor.
County Commissioner's Court. So the state has any number of state employees who contract on behalf of the state, and the argument this court made in its federal sign is that we can't trust our own employees. Well, that's not their words, but that's my words, to do this, and therefore the legislature needs to have its kind of a King's X. But now if the commissioners contract, there's no sort of argument here. Now, why can't the commissioners contract be tantamount to an affirmative act of waiver of sovereign immunity? We, the commissioners, speaking on behalf of the county, as is our authority to do so, expose the county fisc to this contractual obligation. Why didn't all the arguments under federal sign just disappear?
I think, Your Honor, because what in federal sign the court was saying was, let's take care of something here, let's provide an opportunity for contractors. And the legislature looked at that and said, we're going to address that through 2260. And another thing on the table at the time of 2260 is the statute of concern here, 89.004, which does, although may not provide a waiver, it does provide an opportunity, in fact, a necessity, to come forward and speak to the court. And as a practitioner, I've seen time and time again persons come forward, either through citizens' communication or general liability, before our commissioner's court, make their claim, and although we've advised the court, we believe you've got the defense of immunity here, they've said, out of justice, we will pay this claim. And we think that's why we shouldn't find the county is substantially different, because the legislature had the ability to look at 89.004 and say, here's a process. It may be imperfect, in certain settings it may be unfair, but we think it's enough. And with regard to fairness, we think the ultimate impact of declaring a waiver by conduct exception or that 89.004 waives immunity will produce a far harsher result for the majority of our Texas counties who enjoy budgets of less than $5 million a year.
The case, all the precedent that is cited in the briefs in which you mentioned talked about that there was another basis for being able to proceed with suit against the county, as opposed to 89.004. Is there any other basis for proceeding against the county in court on this contract action other than determining that 89.004 provides a waiver of sovereign immunity?
Other than doing that, Your Honor, or deciding that a waiver by conduct exception exists, I don't believe so.
Okay.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from Ms. Palmer.
May it please the court. My name is George Baldwin. I'm here with Ken Hamilton today. We represent the respondent, Pelzel and Associates. We are here asking you to affirm the decision of the Austin Court of Appeals, which directed that this case proceed to trial. Let's be perfectly blunt about this. What Travis County is asking you to hold is that party who enters into a valid contract with the county, then is injured by the breach of that contract by the county, presents his claim to the county for relief under the presentment statute and is rebuffed, cannot thereafter seek redress in court. That's what the county would have to find.
Could the county, could the plaintiff get legislative permission?
I believe that under the Civil Practices and Remedies Code, that would be a possibility. I also
same as you could sue, get permission to sue the state.
If you had to. I also believe that, as this court has been told in the federal sign case and subsequent cases, getting legislative permission to sue a governmental entity is very, very difficult. I believe that you have received a petition for review from a decision in the court of, in Eastland, in which the attorney in question has attached an affidavit from the legislative council saying you don't need that kind of legislative permission to sue a county because the presentment statute takes care of that.
Ms. Bowen, in answering that question, if the legislature could give permission to sue the county, is that the same thing as saying that the county commissioners cannot waive sovereign immunity for the county?
No, I believe the county commissioners could waive sovereign immunity for the county. Certainly they are the legislature of the county. And if the county commissioners decided to pass some kind of agreement by which they agreed to be sued in a particular instance, I think that would be binding on the county. I don't think you need to get there. The presentment statute that the county suggests doesn't provide jurisdiction has been found over and over and over again by the courts of this state to provide a basis for the court to proceed with the claim once the county rebuffs it.
But what in any of those cases was the issue presented that the statute provided a waiver of sovereign immunity?
The issue of sovereign immunity, to the best of my knowledge, to the best of my research, until the Powell decision in May of 2001, has never surfaced in this context.
All right. So all of the cases that talk about, yes, you may sue the county and have some reference to the presentment statute, in fact, the issue that statement is in the cases in a different context, not in the context of interpreting
well, that's not
the presentment statute.
Correct.
Well, then what cases are there? That's what I can't find in any of the precedent where the question of waiver has come up before, and I'm looking for that.
In the Walker County case, the original case in 1857 that looked at the first presentment statute, the 1846 presentment statute that actually had sue or be sued language in it, looked at the procedure that the petitioner followed and said, that's correct. You've done the right procedure. You're allowed to be here in court. The next case that looked at the issue, the Hamilton County versus Garrett case, was decided after the legislature amended the presentment statute to drop the sue and be sued language. It appears from that case, and I have to say that reading 19th century cases is not necessarily illustrative of what the court faces, but it does appear that the county filed a general demurrer to the lawsuit, saying that they were a political body, and couldn't be sued. And what the Hamilton County Court says is, no, that issue was decided in Walker. If you follow the presentment statute, you're properly in court. Now, Travis County makes the point.
That's a little bit vague, reading that case,
that
reaching
is a little
that
bit
conclusion.
Vague.
That's a little bit, so you have kind of to reach to be able to get there.
Well, you have to look at what the demurrer was, and then what the court says is simply to refer back to Walker.
Okay, now move forward from Garrett and looking at the other cases. I don't find any question of interpreting the statute as waiving sovereign immunity to have been answered in any of those decisions.
I believe that's correct. I don't believe sovereign immunity was raised in any of those cases. I do think that is significant.
But moving forward in time, Travis County provides us numerous statutes where there is specific language of waiver of sovereign immunity, and this presentment statute does not have such language. So how do we overcome that?
I think that you have to look at the presentment statute in the context in which it was originally adopted and the way that it's been changed. That is, it originally had sort of be sued language in it. The legislature deleted that in the 1870s. Perhaps stealing the language was redundant. The courts thereafter, the Hamilton County Court, and the courts that looked at the presentment statute through the end of the 19th and early 20th century, while they didn't focus on the issue of sovereign immunity, all said, when the case is presented, when the claim is presented to the county commissioners and the claimant is rebuffed, the authority to file suit is there. The right to file suit is there. The words authority and right are used in the Greer case and in the Anderson case. Right and authority. The legislature has changed, modified slightly the presentment statute over the course of the year since then, but has done nothing to close that gap. I think we can assume that the legislature approved of what the courts did. certainly a number of statutes, the Tort Claims
Act. If the basis, but each of those, in each of those cases, there was another basis for jurisdiction. And so in terms of being able to go to court against the county, and the question was something to do with interpreting the presentment statute or how the presentment statute fit procedurally in connection with taking the next step of going to court. So every time language is in those decisions that said, yes, you can go to court, it really was in connection with answering those types of procedural questions as opposed to jurisdictional questions.
I think if you look at each one of those cases, you will see that there were a variety of different causes of action that were brought by the claimants. Condemnation, eminent domain, warrants, salaries. There's a bond case involving a construction contract. In each one of those cases, there is an underlying cause of action. In none of those cases does the court cite a specific statute that waives sovereign immunity. Does the court cite a constitutional provision that waives sovereign immunity? We have to remember in Texas that sovereign immunity has two sides. It has immunity from suit and immunity from liability. And for a party to proceed against a governmental entity, it's got to prove that there's been a waiver of both. We prove that there's a waiver of immunity from liability in this case by showing a contract. And it's well settled in Texas that if you enter into a contract with the state waives its immunity from liability. In each one of those other cases, there is some other underlying cause of action that the party can use to argue that there has been a waiver of immunity from liability.
Like it's the state in the condemnation case.
That's correct.
Which is not inconsistent with sovereign immunity in a different context, is it?
I don't believe that it is. But I think there also needs to be a basis for the claimant to argue that there is immunity, there is a waiver of immunity from suit. And in those cases, the only place where that can be supplied, if you read the cases, is in the presentment statute.
Is it your view that with the county, as with the state, to enforce any judgment that you might get, if you could sue, you would have to get an appropriation or get the legislative act by the county or the state to get the money? Or can you enforce the judgment?
I think it would be very difficult to enforce a judgment against a county. I think it's fairly clear that counties are immune from...
Could you levy on the commissioner's court building?
go seize a fire truck, perhaps. I think that's a second issue. And I think if you get to that point, you have to assume that the county commissioners are going to ignore a direct judgment of the court. I think that's a hard thing to imagine. I think you also need to consider the fact that we're talking about contract cases.
Well, the state has that routine.
That's correct.
For big judgments. For small judgments, it doesn't. But for big ones, it may decide to pay some or all or none of the judgment.
And I think to a certain extent, that's a risk that a litigant bears. But that should not undercut the litigant's ability to go into court and enforce its contractual relationship with the county, which is, after all, what Pelzel is looking to do here. I think it's important to talk about two additional cases. You cited, or you asked the county about the MOPAC case, and certainly the MOPAC case is a case that has provided rich fodder for this court in the sovereign immunity area, focusing on the dicta in a number of different instances. The MOPAC case clearly states that the presentment statute provides a basis for bringing a lawsuit against the county. It states that's a waiver of immunity with respect to counties, and that's never been overruled.
Well, it's dicta, isn't it?
It is dicta. But it is as much dicta as the dichotomy of immunity from suit and immunity from liability, because after all, the MOPAC case turned in the statute. The Essenberg case that to a certain extent forms the heart of the county's position, I think takes as its predicate that if the presentment statute is followed, that in fact the claimant has a cause of action in court. If you look at the procedural way that Essenberg arose, the county attempted to raise the failure of the presentment statute as the basis for a jurisdictional defect from the claimant's cause of action. What the Supreme Court said was, you can't raise that for the first time on appeal. That's certainly consistent with every other case that's looked at the presentment statute and said that if the claimant doesn't present the claim to the Court of Appeals, to the Commissioner's Court, the remedy for the county is abatement until the presentment is made. In Essenberg, what this court did was say, county, you can't raise that for the first time on appeal. It's not a jurisdictional defect. And directed the Court of Appeals below to find, to reach a decision on the merits. Well, had Dallas County been sovereignly immune, had Dallas County been free to bring its sovereign immunity defense, there would be no reason to do that. And in Essenberg...
I missed the connect. You just made a leap that I didn't go with you.
In Essenberg, the only authority that is the only basis upon which the claimants get into court is a presentment statute. Nothing else is discussed in the Essenberg decision.
Well, of course, that also depends on whether or not the government chooses to raise the jurisdictional issue of whether sovereign immunity has been waived.
I suppose that's correct. But if this court believed that a county was immune, sending a case back below for resolution of merits wouldn't make a lot of sense.
If the county hadn't ever raised sovereign immunity all the way through, why pick a bone that hasn't been thrown out there?
I guess that's true. I guess you have to assume perhaps that Dallas County simply believed, as virtually everyone else who's addressed the subject has believed, that a county can be sued. Certainly if you look at
we've seen a few cases where they just forgot it, and sure enough, there they were in court.
And that happens from time to time. But I think in Essenberg, to make the leap that failure to follow the presentment statute can cause a case to be abated, and the failure of the county to raise that as a defense is not a jurisdictional defect, to turn that around and say the presentment statute doesn't provide jurisdiction to the claimant, I think is a bigger leap.
You don't think there are two different issues there?
I believe there are two different issues. I believe that the claimant has the right to rely on the waiver of sovereign immunity, of immunity from suit that exists in the presentation statute.
I'll let you finish.
Okay. Whereas the county is trying to raise a jurisdictional defect, and what the courts have always said is if you want the claimant to present and he hasn't presented, raise it in the lower court, move to abate it, and cure the defect, which would seem to be the appropriate remedy. Yes.
Where is the clear and unequivocal language of waiver in the statute?
Well, clear and unequivocal is somewhat different from ambiguous. I think the statute says that before you file a lawsuit, you have to present. If you can't file a lawsuit, I'm not sure what sense the statute makes.
Well, it could mean that you can file, that the waiver of immunity to bring certain claims exists in other statutes.
It could well mean that, and in fact it's been held to mean that. But I think it also is, in some of these cases, there is no other basis for bringing a lawsuit.
But isn't it a leap for us, given our jurisprudence, on what kind of language we have determined to be clear and unequivocal waiver language, for us to say that a requirement that before you can bring suit, you must do X, is sufficient language of waiver?
I think it's not inconsistent with the jurisprudence associated with claims against counties. I don't think it's inconsistent with the jurisprudence involving claims against cities. I think it is inconsistent, or could well be inconsistent, with your jurisprudence with respect to claims against the state. And I think therein lies a difference.
What jurisprudence are you referring to with respect to cities and counties?
Well, I think that the mere fact that prior to the Cobb case, no lawsuit against the county for breach of contract has ever been dismissed on the basis of sovereign immunity is an indication that the holdings in Watkins and the holdings in Hamilton County and the statute have been seen by all the courts that have looked at it as the basis for providing a claim against the county. There simply are no cases. There simply is no precedent for dismissing a breach of contract case against the county once that claim has been presented and rebuffed by the commissioner's court.
Did I understand you to say that if the commissioner's court wanted to, it could tomorrow meet and decide that whatever the outcome of this case, whatever we decide, we're never going to pay any judgment, even if they get all the relief they want from the Supreme Court of Texas, we're simply not going to pay, and that you would have no remedy against that sort of action by the commissioner?
I think trying to structure a method of executing a judgment against the county would be very difficult.
Be difficult, but it's not. You're not saying it's impossible here. What I'm trying to decide is, you know, what are we talking about here? You know, there's immunity from suit, yes, and all that. But if in the end the commissioner's court could just say, we're not going to pay this judgment, period, and there's nothing you can do about it, then we're back to square one.
I think politically it's unrealistic that that would happen. I think politically it's unrealistic that the commissioner's court and the county enter into a contract and are facing breach of contract damages and litigate the court through the county, through the district court in the county, and perhaps test it on appeal, and the judgment comes down.
But how is it politically realistic for a county to say, I mean, at this stage, that, yes, we've entered into this contract, the performance was done, but we're going to resist any lawsuit and simply, and again, really not pay because we're immune from suit, period?
Well, I think if the court were to rule with the county on this in this case, I think that would become a realistic possibility. I think it hasn't arisen because the general consensus is that if the county breaches the contract and presents a claim and the commissioner's court turns it down, you can file a lawsuit. And therefore,
you said presentation of claim, you say on contract claim, the contract claim, the statute's not limited.
That's correct.
It would be a waiver of all court. All claims of all types.
Certainly not a waiver of tort claims because the legislature has acted in the tort claims area and enacted the Tort Claims Act. And I think that precludes that field. We talked about nuisance.
Well, we have to construe those together. I mean, and again, it's a presentation. A claim statute is not limited to contract.
Well, I think that to a certain extent, our argument is presenting statute waives immunity from suit.
All suit, tort suits, everything else.
From suit. It doesn't waive immunity from liability. We have achieved immunity from waiver of immunity from liability by arguing that there's a contract. There has to be some underlying cause of action that presents subject matter jurisdiction, for lack of a better term. I think, for example, if you wanted to bring a fraud case against you, a case that doesn't exist in common law, that the courts haven't looked at and said there's a waiver of liability for that particular tort. It's not covered by the Tort Claims Act, so there's no waiver of liability there. Even if you presented a fraud claim to the commissioner's court and it turned it down, I wouldn't argue you could proceed against the county on that fraud claim, because I don't think you'd be meeting both waiver tests. But in a contract action, you do. And we are, after all, talking about a contract action in this lawsuit. I think there's a distinction. I think the claimant has to demonstrate in response to a plea to the jurisdiction.
Well, I understand the distinction between immunity from suit and immunity from jurisdiction, but I'm just saying it's not, you keep limiting your argument to contract when the statute's not.
Okay.
I guess I would focus a lot on the underlying action, but you're not suing for a quantum merit claim. You're suing for extra charges allowable under the contract, just not part of the original contract price.
We are suing for about $5,000 in contract price and for damages arising as a result of the contract breach. They're based on
consequential damages.
I believe they're direct. I mean, I think they're extended over.
Where's the waiver?
Job site over.
Where's the waiver of liability for anything other than contract?
I think that if you, well, they're contract damages. The damages that Pelzel is seeking in this case are traditional contract damages.
So you couldn't sue for quantum merit?
I don't believe you can sue for quantum merit. I think that's fairly well settled. But we're suing under the contract. And the series of cases that begin with Christo v. Blumen run right through federal sign clearly indicate that when the state enters or the governmental entity enters into a contract, it waives its immunity from liability with respect to damages arising from the breach of that contract. It's the liability from suit question that we're facing. facing here.
Other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Good morning, Justices. As the discussions here today have revealed, issues actually boil down to whether or not the court is going to adhere to the precedent that's been set forth previously. And I characterize
Let me ask you this one. Mr. Baldwin seems to say that all of this precedent, regardless of the fact that it has not mentioned waiver of sovereign immunity, has resulted in a practice in Texas in which counties are routinely sued for breach of contract actions after presentment, and the counties have just said, okay. So are you asking us to do a very dramatic switch here in terms of what the usual practice is on behalf of counties statewide?
Your Honor, I disagree with Mr. Baldwin's assessment of the way the law has been in the past.
Well, how about, I understand that in terms of, I mean, how about how things are functioning around the state of Texas with respect to counties?
And that is what I disagree with. As to 89.004 being considered a waiver of immunity from suit as to breach of contract cases. Contrary to Mr. Baldwin's assessment, I think the reverse would be true. If it had been considered a waiver of immunity from suit, we would have actually seen more cases in which the court was looking at a breach of contract case where a county was at a party and the presentment had been made, which had not been the case.
So is it usually the practice then that contract actions against counties begin and end at the commissioner's court?
I believe that is correct, Your Honor.
We're not seeing counties regularly at the courthouse if a party becomes is dissatisfied with what the commissioner's court decides.
That is correct. In fact, what has been seen through what I have seen is that federal sign is starting to apply to counties. The idea of the only issue is whether or not waiver by conduct would apply to counties, not whether or not 89.004 was the actual waiver of immunity from suit.
Well, that's kind of hard to believe. Counties are so much more reasonable than the state. Why should it be any different one way or the other?
Your Honor, there may be several reasons for that. One is you're talking about smaller entities that have to deal with constituents electing them. That may be one reason. And they may be, because of the presentment statute, the ability to resolve issues, which is the whole purpose of the presentment statute, that county commissioners may be resolving those issues up front. And they may not be talking about bigger sums of money for these contracts to actually that are at issue. In addition, I think that the way, if a judgment is ever rendered, contrary to Mr. Baldwin's position, I believe there is a statute of recodification of the 1826 legislature laws that were in effect that says a county must pay on a judgment. They don't have I don't believe they have an option of not paying on the judgment.
What statute is that?
Your Honor, I don't have the exact site with me right now, but I believe it was codified in the government code or the local government code. And it was the 1846 law, which originated with the creating counties, where the original sue and may be sued language was contained. The first decision that the court needs to make is whether or not it's going to continue to defer to the legislature to waive sovereign immunity from suit with clear and unambiguous language. Justice Hankinson pointed out there's nothing in 89.004 that waives immunity as to counties. There is no clear and unambiguous language. And when the court looks to whether or not to apply waiver by conduct as to counties, the only issue before the court is there any language, any statute that's provided or referenced that would waive immunity as to counties?
Can the county commissioners waive their sovereign immunity from suit?
Can they, Your Honor? Is that what the question was? I believe they can.
Why isn't it clear and unambiguous waiver of the sovereign immunity from suit when they are the ones who sign the contract?
I believe the same standards that would apply to a state would apply to the county. That
but
it
the,
is in a waiver.
But the presumption, the assumption, the stated assumption in federal sign was because the legislator wanted to retain control over all these individuals out here who are all doing who knows what. But now the commissioners know who knows what because they signed the contract. And if they can waive sovereign immunity, why isn't their signing the contract a clear and unequivocal waiver of their power to keep from being obligated under the contract?
Your Honor, I think the issue for the state of being able to control their employees would also apply to the commissioners being able to control their budget. They aren't able to foresee all of the claims. For instance, in this case,
but that wouldn't apply either because they would have, since they are the ones who set the budget, and they're the ones who obligate the county to the expenditure. That determination was made at the time that they signed the contract.
However, as in this instance, the claim isn't just for the breach of contract amount. It's exceeding. It's an infinite amount of money that can be implicated if the immunity from suit was applied, or the waiver of immunity from suit was applied to counties.
So the decision to waive sovereign immunity is a function of the uncertainty of what they're obligating themselves under the contract to do.
In part, it's the financial resources of the county and the resources of a local government that doesn't have the ability to create independent revenue sources. They are only authorized to do what they are expressly authorized to do. And going out, unlike municipalities, they cannot create revenue. They are limited to what they can do. So it does become an issue on their resources, financial and otherwise. As I was saying, sovereign immunity, there is no statute that waives the breach of sovereign immunity as to a breach of contract claim against a county. In fact, it was this court who characterized waiver by conduct, that theory, as a judicially imposed equitable remedy.
What are the damages that you say they're seeking that are not contract damages?
Your Honor, there was the approximately $1,500 in liquidated damages that they are seeking, and $130,000 in addition to the actual agreed upon contract price.
And what comprises that
$130,000? Your Honor, my understanding of it was that it was not just direct damages, but additional, they were doing additional services to what they're doing.
Would you send us a letter saying what statutory authority there is that counties must pay their judgments, or whatever authority you think there is or is not?
Yes, Your Honor, I will.
Explain to me real quickly, if there's a statute that says you have to pay your judgments, which contemplates you'll be going to court and get a judgment against you, and the presentment statute doesn't waive immunity from suit, how does the theory waive immunity from court?
It would be statutory provided. For instance, the Texas Tort Claims Act would provide a waiver of immunity from suit.
So there's no statutory, there's no way to get waiver of immunity on a contract claim under the current system.
But for consent. They can go to the court and ask the commission's court and ask for consent. That's one mechanism. They can go to the legislature.
So that you say, where does the county commissioner's court have authority to give consent to sue?
Your Honor, I'm extrapolating from the idea that case law has found that the commissioner's court can grant permission or consent not to even go through the presentment process. The ability that they have the authority to say whether or not an individual has to comply with that, I would extrapolate that they would have the authority to also comply.
Well, doesn't that mean the presentment statute waive immunity from suit?
I don't believe that is correct, Your Honor. The ability to go forward and say, you don't have to wait for us to decide on your claim.
You
know that it is a denial.
You say a waiver of the presentment is automatically a waiver of immunity from suit?
No. Allowing the party not to go through the process in order to say, you know that we are not going to recognize your claim.
That's different from saying, and we will sue you in court. We're waiving our liability
that
as a community from suing.
That is, but I'm saying that because they have the ability for that provision, I was extrapolating that they would also have the ability to say, yes, you can sue us.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes today's arguments, and the marshal will adjourn the court.
Thank you.